Coming up on New York Now, thousands have crossed illegally into Canada at the end of this dead-end road in Champlain. We'll tell you what a group in the North Country is doing to assist these refugees passing through their community.
I can't not do this. I cannot stand by and know that this is happening and not play some positive role.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining us here on New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. We're going to start off this pre-election day program at the Reporters Roundtable. So let's send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler.
All right, thanks, Matt. For analysis of the week's happenings and a look ahead to next week's Election Day action, I am happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Joe Spector from the USA Today Network and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. All right, New Yorkers are supposed to head to the polls on Tuesday. Many regional, local elections. The biggest statewide question, I think we would agree, is going to be whether or not New Yorkers should hold a constitutional convention. It comes up, as per our current constitution, every 20 years. Yeah. Siena poll released this week that suggested we're not going to be covering this over the course of the next 2 years.
No question. I mean, the poll showed a majority of voters do not support the constitutional convention, and you just see millions of dollars being poured in, mainly by the public unions, employee unions, and even some private unions, concerned about the convention, what might come out of it, in particular, whether there would be a vote to strip them of their public pensions. I mean, and so you're just seeing a lot of much more money being put into the opposition than for those who are for it. And those who are for it were saying, listen, we're not looking to strip anybody's public pensions. We just see this as an opportunity to try to reform New York State government, get some new laws, new things in the Constitution to help. But so far, you know, the opposition is clearly...
I think it shows the success of their campaign. They've managed to flip the script and say the convention itself would be corrupt. It wouldn't be a way for reform. It would be the Albany politicians. There'd be outside money. And they're playing on the fear. They're like, look, there's a lot of rights in the Constitution now. We don't want them taken away. There's a lot of chaos going on in Washington. And I think some of that argument is kind of resonating with people. I'd also mention that the opponents are gun rights groups, Second Amendment advocates, the Conservative Party. We have both pro and anti-abortion groups. It's a huge coalition, as well as the top politicians. Governor Cuomo has severe reservations about it. The legislative leaders are against it, which, you know, maybe perversely some voters will go in and say, well, everyone's against it. Maybe I should be for it. So I think, you know, there's still a chance that it could pass, but it does look, the other thing, supporters haven't really made a big case. You know, I hear from the opponents all the time, and I have not heard from the supporters in the same way.
Well, I mean, the question is, if this was approved, the delegates would be selected, and then the question is whether or not that would be a fair process. Would the deck be stacked with elected officials, other special interest folks who would be the delegates, and therefore put on issues? I mean, ultimately, even if there was a convention, voters would have to still vote on whatever
changes. Yeah, they would have
changes.
final say.
And that's what some the supporters will say, is like, anything that's done, you know, it's not just an automatic thing. Yeah. I mean, this is a multi-year process.
And we saw that happen in 1967. The voters ultimately rejected it. There hasn't been a successful convention since 1938.
Yeah.
So you just wonder if times are changing and it just isn't the right time for it, not to discourage anybody from voting for it if they want to.
It's fair to say it's the classic battle between fear and hope.
Yes,
fear
absolutely.
That pensions are going to get cracked open and hope that
the
state government could finally, you know, address things that have been intractable seemingly in the legislative process.
Yeah, I should also mention the Adirondack Park, the Forever Wild advocates are worried about that. So it isn't even just union stuff. It's like everything that's...
And it's a real mix of people who you don't really see come together, like you said, conservatives, environmentalists, unions, gun rights groups. So, so it really is a mix.
On the other hand, we have a lot of issues with corruption in state government, and that's what advocates are saying. This is a way you could actually fix those things that the politicians are never going to do.
We should also mention there are two other ballot proposals. We've dealt with them on this show in recent weeks. One that would create a land bank that would allow for certain development within the state forest preserve without its losing any acreage. Mm-hmm. That is supported by many, I would say the majority of environmental groups, because right now we're amending the Constitution in kind of tiny ways every year.
Every time they want to repair a bridge, right, they have to amend the Constitution. Local government officials are for it, but I think you explained that pretty well, but it's confusing. And if you look at the language on the ballot and you didn't know what it was, you might say, oh, I don't know what this is. I'm going to vote no or even leave it blank. And I think the problem is everybody supports it, so there hasn't been much argument or coverage on it. So that one is kind of a wild card as to whether it will happen or not. I mean, the environmentalists, the local government groups say this is good. It's not going to hurt the forest preserve, but we're going to be able to, you know, lay cable for internet lines or just, you know, do this little tinkering along the county and state roads. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
And the third proposition, of course, is one that would allow for the stripping of, speaking of cracking open pensions, stripping pensions from corrupt elected
officials. That's actually number two on the ballot. And we also should note, flip the ballot. You have to flip your ballot.
You have to look on the other side.
Thank you very much. You have to look on the other side of the ballot. And, you know, that's interesting, you know, my colleague John Campbell did a good story about pointing out there's some Facebook posts that suggest that if you don't do anything, if you don't vote, then it would be counted as a yes. And that is actually not true at all.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned
that. So there's several
of these kind
of
things. I actually did that story, too, because I was getting emails from listeners saying, is it true that if I leave it blank, it'll be counted as a yes vote? And I had to do a story saying,
so we should let people know that's not true. It doesn't count.
If it's blank, it's blank. You can choose to not vote. It won't count as a yes. I actually tried to track down the source of how that came about.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of misconceptions out there. The number two ballot question is on the pensions. And this has been, you know, years in the making. This is something that the legislature had to approve twice, and it would strip politicians and others, top officials, of their pensions if they're convicted.
Of a crime connected to their office.
But the crime is after January 1, 2018. It wouldn't affect the two former legislative leaders who are going on trial again. It wouldn't affect Cuomo's nine associates, eight of whom go on trial next year. But that's because the federal constitution prohibits you going back and creating new punishments for crimes in the past. So it is limited. And so the thought is, will it be a deterrent if somebody commits a crime in the future? The thing is, what I found covering these trials with these people, they never think they're going to get caught.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're worried about losing their pensions, because that is the whole thing. They're doing these things never thinking they're going to get in trouble.
Right, and some people who are opposed to this, I mean, would say, you know, why should someone's family be
but
penalized?
There have been amendments made so that families, the judges essentially would have a role
have
in divvying up that pension.
That's right. That's a good point.
So
we
should move on. There are, of course, other races, many, many hundreds of races on the local and regional level. Joe, what are some that you're going to be watching? USA Today Network covers a lot of communities around the state. What are the biggies for you?
Yeah, well, you know, this is a local election year in addition to the propositions. And so you have mayor's races throughout upstate and New York City, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, and then obviously New York City and Albany, too.
Albany, too, yeah. Although that's pretty well decided.
You know, so with all of these, let's start with the city mayor races, you know, these usually, more or less, they're decided in the Democratic primaries because they have large Democratic enrollments. And then you have two big county executive races in Westchester, Nassau County. Mm-hmm. Rob Astorino seeking a third term in Westchester. He's in a close race with Senator George Latimer. Our paper, the Journal News, had a poll out on Thursday that showed Latimer with a slight edge. The three-point lead, and the margin of error was 4. So it's really a dead heat there, which is interesting. And now you're seeing a lot of money being put into that race. Mm-hmm. The Mercers put $1 million into that race to help Astorino.
Yeah.
That was countered just the other day by the New York Democratic Committee run by Governor Cuomo.
The Democrats have really pointed out that the Mercers are involved as, you know, scaring people, these outside conservatives.
Mercers also mentioned in the Constitutional Convention fight as well.
Yeah, going to control Rob Astorino. But Westchester now is mostly Democratic, right, demographically. So
it is. And, you know, Cuomo beat Astorino in the home county in 2014. But, you know, for Democrats, they'd love to be able to beat Astorino, who is, you know, poised to potentially run again for governor in 2018.
It would knock him right out out of running again. So right. that's going to be an interesting one that will probably go down to the wire.
We should move on. One of the biggest surprises this week is the exit from public service mm-hmm. of Sam Hoyt, former assemblyman who came aboard as the Western New York Buffalo Area Regional Chief of Empire State Development. Left state service mm-hmm. and early praise from people, and then of course the next day we found out that he left under a cloud, ethical cloud.
Well, first he said he was resigning. He needed a job in the private sector. Everyone was like, okay, that's fine. Including the state's lieutenant governor Kathy Hochul, who's also from Buffalo and a friend of his, said, you know, we were fortunate to have him. We're sorry to see him go. And then it turned out the next day he paid off a woman $50,000 who said that she was sexually harassing him. He denies that.
Or that he was trying to continue a relationship with her that she wanted to end.
Yeah, which is, you know, I mean, I guess that counts as harassment. Yeah. But you know, point out that Hoyt says he didn't do that, though he admits he made some mistakes and is under investigation by the governor's Office of Employee Relations. And that raises a question of how long have they known about this?
Hoyt's got a history here, right, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, he goes back to 2003. In fact, he had a situation with an intern when he was an assemblyman, and he ended up being essentially kind of admonished by the speaker several years later. But so that harkened back to when this came out. Everyone mm-hmm. said they pointed back to that case with him.
And you wondered if he had maybe been punished more severely, then would he maybe have not, you know, acted in the future if he did what the woman says? Like, maybe if there were consequences.
You noted that that Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul came initially praising Hoyt. You sat down and spoke with her for an interview that will air in the near future, mm-hmm. and you put the question to her about what did she know, and does she have any regrets about those compliments?
What did you think when you heard about this after you'd said nice things about him? Did you feel deceived?
I felt I didn't have all the facts at the time, absolutely. And not happy about that.
You know, I think it embarrassed her that she initially didn't know about it. Like she said, I don't think she was pleased that she was put into that position. I don't think a lot of people are pleased with that. But, you know, we're having a real moment here with sexual harassment and charges coming. I mean, NPR is having its own crisis where the news director of NPR, Mike Oreskes, had to leave. And now there's questions, what did the management know about that? And when did they know it? And that's, you know, becoming a real crisis in many places of business.
Do you think it's a coincidence that Hoyt exited less than a month after the revelations about Harvey Weinstein began this tidal wave of revolutions?
I mean, that's something that we would like to know as a reporter. I mean, did people in state government know about this and think it was okay to keep him on the job, but it was only when they feared public disclosure that they decided that he had to be let go? And that's something that, you know, I think people would like to know the answer to.
A final issue we need to touch on Thursday, finally, congressional Republicans unveiled their tax plan. The response from within New York State was furious, largely because of, although there were tweaks to the state and local tax deduction, that Republicans would like to see reduced, it's still there.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats in New York were still upset about it. So initially there was talk that you wouldn't be able to deduct local, state, including property taxes on your, and that's a big deal for New York because we have high property taxes. So now the latest compromise is you'd be able to deduct up to $10,000 of your property taxes, not the local and state taxes, but $10,000 on the property taxes. So, if you're in downstate in particular, Westchester, Long Island, Westchester's average property tax bill is $15,000. So you see, it's just not getting to the level. So what you saw was Democrats saying this is still isn't good enough. Two Republicans in the House from New York, Chris Collins and Tom Reed, were still for it. But then you saw some of the folks who had voted last week against the federal budget, saying now, well, we got to take a closer look at it. John Faso, a couple others were saying, we don't know, we're not sure, but they still want to see those local and state deductions in there.
It's going to hit some of their wealthier constituents and probably their donors. And yeah, I agree, downstate, so-called middle class, they're going to take a hit.
All right, well, that is where we have to leave it this week. So thanks very much to Joe Spector of USA Today Network and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
All right, thanks, Casey. President Donald Trump's tough stance on immigration during the 2016 campaign stoked fear among those in the country illegally. After his shocking victory in November, many have left or are in the process of leaving, fearing deportation from the country they thought would be their eventual home. New Yorkers who live near the border are noticing, and in the city of Plattsburgh, a group is formed to help those who are passing through their community.
What can we do as a region to come together and push forward policy-wise?
Are there any legal repercussions for those that are helping to coach and aid the immigrants?
About 150 people gathered at SUNY Plattsburgh recently for a forum called Our North Country Refugee Crisis.
Where are these people now that are the 10,000 to 12,000 people that are in this limbo waiting? How are they being cared for?
They're asking these questions because since the start of the year, thousands of refugees have come through the city on their way to Canada. Janet McFetridge has seen firsthand the last few steps many have taken in the U.S. before heading toward an uncertain future in what will now be a second foreign country.
A mother and two young daughters arrived one day. The mother could not convince the children to get out of the taxi. She was begging them to leave the car. And the driver was saying very impatiently, "I have another ride, I have to drive away." She was considering climbing back into the car and heading back to Plattsburgh. She explained to me that the girls thought that they would be arrested and that they would be separated from their mother. I explained that they would not be separated. They all climbed out and they crossed.
This is Roxham Road in Champlain, the last town in New York before you get to the border. It used to be a run-of-the-mill, dead-end street here in the North Country, but now it's become the final destination, at least here in the U.S., for refugees seeking asylum in Canada. Sure enough, as soon as we reach the end of the road, a man looking to be in his 40s and traveling alone approached the border.
Cross here, you'll be arrested.
It's your choice.
According to the Canadian government, the man is one of over 12,000 people who have crossed here into Lacolle, Quebec. The situation started to receive a lot of coverage shortly after Donald Trump's inauguration. Refugees were coming to Plattsburgh day after day by plane, train, and bus, and then often taking a cab to Roxham Road. In the spring, Attorney General Eric Schneiderman obtained a court order against a local company after an investigation into price gouging. One owner ended up paying a $2,500 fine. This news angered a lot of people in the region.
The mayor, Colin Reed, who's a friend of mine as well as a congregant in my church, he was telling us this is a terrible thing and what could we do to help? What could we do to help these refugees as they were being exploited by their situation? At the most terrible time in their lives, they're making the journey of a lifetime. They've invested everything they can into this, and then to be taken advantage of is inhumane. So we decided, okay, let's do something. Let's form a group. Let's see what we can do to organize in ways that will be most helpful. And then things started happening.
The group called Plattsburgh Cares has held a series of conversations, including this one in October. The organization brought to the SUNY campus Mayor Colin Reed, a local immigration attorney, Champlain resident Janet McFetridge, and Mary Foster, a member of Solidarity Across Borders, a migrant justice network based in Montreal. She describes what the process is for those that cross illegally.
Once they arrive, they are brought to the Canadian Border Services Agency. Immigration Canada determines whether they're eligible or not to apply for refugee status. That can take up to 3 months now, no services during that time. Once you get eligibility, then you're able to apply for some very basic services. I'll just give you an example. Welfare for refugees is $650 a month in Montreal. Rent, the cheapest apartment you can get, very small, not comfortable lodgings is $450. So there's very little you can live on. And that's for people coming who've just gone through this traumatic experience, are trying to settle themselves in society. There's not a lot of work opportunities. You do have to apply for a work permit in order to be able to work legally in Canada and continue to renew that while you're waiting for your status.
The Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada said of the 592 claims finalized between March and September of this year, 69% were accepted, which is encouraging to those crossing. But Mary Foster says it can be an agonizing wait for the government to hear your case. On average, around 17 months.
Some people have families, and so they've made contacts beforehand and are being taken care of by their families. Other people are presumably joining the underground economy as the only choice, so working exploited jobs, long hours, low pay, to try and make ends meet. There are very overstretched refugee support services in Montreal that are working overtime to try and to just meet people's needs. And there's community support too, broader people just wanting to, for the same reason that people here are trying to pitch in.
Plattsburgh Cares recently became a 501c3 nonprofit. President Kathy Sager describes just some of the ways the organization is lending a hand.
Our goal is to meet their needs, their goals. However, is safe and respectful and responsible for them. So it's really what they ask of us. So for example, we got a call from someone who was having questions about can he, where could he stay here inexpensively? And he had limited resources. Can he get a working permit here? Can he get a driver's license here? A family we're working with right now, they needed housing, they needed medical care, they needed all kinds of things. They were in a terrible situation, bounced back from the border, stuck in a grungy, horrible hotel, and paying for it out of their own pocket, and being terrified, not knowing what to do, and not speaking English. So we also provide translation services, transportation, to and from doctor's appointments, trying to help the family understand what their next logical step will be.
The group has around 150 volunteers and is actively fundraising to help continue their mission.
Most people want to help. This is a beautiful community. They have very big hearts. If they understand what's going on, perhaps today, after today they do, have a better picture of what's happening, they want to reach out and do something. Whether it's to write a check, to support our group, or to do hands-on care, give people a lift, go to the grocery store, buy them groceries. People are anxious to help. They want to do the right thing.
Janet McFetridge still goes 2 to 3 times a week to Roxham Road, bringing water, snacks, and these days, gloves and mittens, doing whatever she can to help.
I can't not do this. I cannot stand by and know that this is happening and not play some positive role.
She expects to return well into the winter, as many more are still making that turn onto this dead-end road for a chance at a better life, just not in the U.S. Our New York Now poll question asks, do you agree with President Donald Trump's views on immigration? Let us know by going to our website, nynow.org. Last time we saw you, we asked you how concerned you were about the possibility of not being able to deduct your state and local taxes. And the majority said they were very concerned. Debbie in Babylon, watching on WLIW, said, a move to eliminate this provision would have a significantly negative impact on my ability to meet my expenses. Martha in the Bronx, watching on WNET. This is one of the few deductions that most middle-class persons can take without having to meet a threshold. I see this simply as a tax increase for us. Richard in Hilton, watching on WXXI, said he was not concerned. The SALT, state and local taxes, has the low-tax states subsidizing the high-tax states, in particular New York. The majority who use this deduction make over $100,000. And finally, Michael, watching from the shores of Lake Ontario, said he was very concerned, saying the possibility is outrageous. I'm 65 plus, retired, carry a mortgage, and am on fixed income. This will have a serious adverse impact. Thank you to all those who reached out. You can vote this week again by going to nynow.org. You can stream any of our past programs and follow links to us on social media there, including Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. You can also catch up on the latest news by heading to the Capital Confidential blog. There is a link on our website, and you can also go to timesunion.com.
All right, well, that's all the time we have this week. As mentioned previously on this program, Tuesday is Election Day. You might be interested in state politics. You might watch this show 52 weeks out of the year. If you don't go to the polls, you're not doing your part.
Interested to see, Casey, what the numbers are this year. This is an off election year. Numbers are usually pretty poor, but a lot of people on both sides of the aisle are politically motivated this year, so it might be a better than normal off year. We'll see.
We'll see if there is indeed a Trump effect. All right, well, for Matt Ryan, I'm Casey Seiler for the Times Union. Thanks for watching. We hope to see you next week right here on New York Now.